You're listening to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast with Mike Chappell and Dave Griffiths.
Inside the Fox 59 CBS 4 podcast studio, welcome to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast. Alongside Mike Chappell and Matt Adams, I'm Dave Griffiths. We appreciate you tuning in for another week of dramatic Colts offseason movings forward. And or not movings forward.
A lot of activity, yeah, just exactly. Not what people really wanted.
Pretty much. Or not what people expected. Or not what people reported. So that's about all I'll say about L'Jarius Sneed not being a Colt, no deal being done.
I thought there was a press conference tomorrow.
Right. We got the email, didn't we? Maybe I thought I saw something. But big changes also in store for the NFL season in general in 2024 because the league meetings are this week down in Orlando. We'll talk plenty about what's being said down there. Chris Ballard's down there. Shane Steichen's down there.
We're down there. They're over now, but...
Yes, Ward, excuse me. Yes. Correct. And you have gone there in the past. It can be a very valuable resource. And especially if Jim Irsay was talking, I think it would have been pretty important for somebody to be down there. We would have sent somebody. But since we had just spoken to at least Steichen and Ballard relatively recently at the combine.
Yeah.
We decided not to go down personally, but ESPN's Stephen Holder is down there among plenty of other NFL media reporters. But so I'll give credit to Stephen for a lot of the things we will discuss on the podcast today from some of the-
and also James Boyd and yes. Nate Atkins are the star, okay. And then James is with The Athletic,
yes,
and Colts.com. So just briefly, we were going to go if Jim Irsay was going to have his usual confab with the local indie media. We were going to be there. I had a credential, but with him not. But I'm telling you, from a beat writer guy who covers the team, it's invaluable. You get 30 minutes at least with your head coach, and you just get stuff, and then you get half an hour, 45 minutes with Chris Ballard, and some stuff you can't use because it's sort of background. But then he explains, which he did. It's just incredibly invaluable for writers who cover a team on a daily basis to be there. And I've been there often, many times. And then again, when you get a chance to talk to the owner, it's just great because he can't help himself. He's gonna say stuff,
and it's always on the record with him.
Right. But some good stuff came out of it.
We'll start there with L'Jarius Sneed not signing with the Indianapolis Colts, despite all the drama that went forth over the past couple weeks. That we
there were like 2 days were crazy.
Yeah. You told me about it that Saturday when there was an indication or two.
There was a report.
This was going to happen. Yeah, exactly.
There was a report.
An actual report that it was done, that it was going to happen. Not true at all, in the slightest. But he's going to the Tennessee Titans now, rather. He's playing for Tennessee because Tennessee sent to the Chiefs a 2025 third-round pick, so not even a pick this year, next year, and then had a seventh-round pick swap this year. The Chiefs and the Titans swapped their positions in the seventh round. Well, what a dramatic cost there for the Titans to bring in a very good cornerback. He's not a Pro Bowler. He's never been a Pro Bowler in his career.
I was surprised.
I was a little bit too, but he's a solid player, and he got a very good salary, 4 years, $76.4 million, making him one of the highest paid corners in the league.
We always say what's a player's value. It's what one team will pay.
Yep.
Forget markets. What will one team pay?
Mm-hmm. And the Titans deemed that he would be that valuable to them. And so when you look at that contract, chap, I'd imagine based on the amount that was given to Tennessee and then the amount that was given to Sneed himself, I mean, amount that was given to the Chiefs and then the amount that was given to Sneed himself, if one of those two was holding up the Colts, I would lean toward what Sneed eventually got salary-wise.
Yeah, the compensation, I can live with that. If you thought that guy was enough to make a strong push for $15 million a year, whatever, then the compensation is secondary and you don't worry about it.
But right.
They were not going to go that high. And again, I don't think Chris Ballard really talked about it in depth about how serious was your interest. You know, again, that's a relative term. I think they had a serious interest in him, and then when it came to what he wanted, they weren't going to do it. And conversely, he more or less confirmed, you know, we talked about Daniel Hunter, where he got 2 years, $49 million from Houston.
Mm-hmm.
With the Colts, what I was told, the Colts offered more than $49 million. But I don't think they went to the $48 million guaranteed.
Right.
Which is...
That's the difference.
Which is...
That's a big difference.
It's, yes. Now...
We joked about this last week, Matt, when you were out. Like, that $1 million, not guaranteed. Oh, my goodness. That's what did it.
Because somebody mentioned, well, maybe he went to Houston because of D'Amico Ryans, and they got more pieces in place, yada, yada. So, well, but if the Colts had offered $48 million guaranteed, he'd have been here. So it's at some level, you've got to have a line that is just too much. Mm-hmm. And maybe part of it is Ballard and the Colts said, well, we gave Shaq great money and great guaranteed money, and it didn't pan out long term.
Right.
You've got to have – and again, what I've always said, and I'll still say this, and people can disagree, but – the argument can't be that the Colts don't spend. The argument needs to be that you didn't agree with how they spent it, and that's valid. We can and I've not agreed with all of this. I hope to goodness they sign a corner, safety first. They need a veteran safety. And Ballard indicated he understands that. But just make the correct argument. They've spent almost $200 million, $130 million like is guaranteed. It's money you've guaranteed. Just have your argument in line with the facts, and then we're fine.
Yeah, you say that everybody needs a line they can't cross, and I'll say this for Chris Ballard. He has lines, and he does not cross them, period.
The only time he really did is when they brought back T.Y. Hilton.
Mm-hmm. That's
when
right.
When Jim Irsay, from all indications, he sweetened the pot a little bit.
Yes, that is the indication. And then after that season... T.Y. Hilton really didn't have much of an NFL future. So I'll say this for Chris. He was probably right in that scenario that he had the line for T.Y. And Jim Irsay could say from a business aspect, he was right, you know, to have T.Y. on the roster for another year. So there's kind of there's two ways to look at that, at that move from several years ago.
And also, again, which people really don't agree with is, again, the fan base would really have preferred a Daniel Hunter. They would have preferred a Legarius Sneed. Okay, that's fine, and I understand that. Hunter would be great with his defense.
Yep.
I've always talked, you need a guy. But at the risk of who? You would not have brought back all these players. So which ones? And, you talked about Grover Stewart. Kenny Moore's probably coming back. Of course, Pittman was. Maybe Zaire Franklin doesn't get his extension. Although they knew that how grossly underpaid he was. But somebody would not be back. Mm-hmm. Taekwondo, I don't know, somewhere. So it's just, again, they've made these moves, and I am convinced one of the reasons they're sort of running it back is they believe that Anthony Richardson will make that much of a difference, which we can argue that. He's played four games.
That's a lot of faith in a guy who's played four NFL games and played how many college games? Like, was not it, a lot. It was a handful. It was 12, 17.
Right. One year. It was, and on top of that, with all they did last year, 9-8 and this close to doing something really good, they had Jonathan Taylor for basically half the year. I mean, when he was really good. So they're really banking on guys, two of their better players coming back and really making a difference. And I understand that. It's just you're putting an awful lot of faith in the quarterback. You just are.
And then on the other side of the ball, the Colts officially did re-sign Taven Bryan, adding some more depth to that defensive line. We talked about that a bit last week, but that move is now official. And Ballard acknowledged that some youth lack of depth in the defensive backfield kind of held Gus Bradley back last season, saying there's still work to be done there.
Those are leap of faith there, too, because they're banking on Juju Brents. They're banking on Jalen Jones and Dallas Flowers, who had the Achilles.
Yep.
So... he said there's work to be done, and I've always said too, what none of us like is patience, because we there's still time to do things, you know, with free agency, with the draft. You know, I mean, they could certainly draft a corner.
You would expect whoever they draft to be a starter immediately. It's a starter,
15,
or a receiver,
right.
Or wherever. It's going to be someone who starts day one. It has to be.
Unless it's a receiver, then he's in that mix.
The mix,
which is. Starter, you know, Pittman's a starter.
Right.
After that, it's sort of a mismatch of who gets the reps. But he's going to be a major contributor.
Yeah, somebody who would get 40, 50 snaps out of the 70 snaps, you know, a game.
Correct.
Which for receivers.
Yeah. I mean, if you could get a contribution like you had from Downs last year from somebody that you get at 15, you'd be pretty good.
I would hope for something more, to be honest, than Downs, who was a third round pick. I would want something a little bit more.
He set a rookie record. He did. So
that's a good
point. I'm saying at the very
reason,
least,
yeah,
if you could
to
at
your
least
point.
Get that, I think you'd be, you know,
yes,
somewhere in the ballpark.
All right. You'd be all right. Julian Blackman still no team for him.
He's coming. I think he's back.
Okay.
I think he found out that
market's not there for him at what he wants to be.
The market he wanted isn't there. And Stephen Holder wrote that from Ballard that they've reengaged discussions. So I think that gets done. I'm guessing 2 years and throw a number. I don't know, 10 million, 5 million a year. I don't know. But I just think, and this is a case where the player had the chance to go out and see what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very good player. He led the league, led the team in interceptions last year. The injury he's coming off of was a shoulder, nothing significant. So, yeah, he's had injury issues in the past. But I think this would be a really good – but re-signing him doesn't alleviate the fact that you still need a veteran safety. So, but I really think in the next – before the draft, I think Blackman gets done. I just do.
And I have no problem with Blackman going out and trying to test and push the limit, push the envelope for a contract. He was basically the youngest safety out there looking in free agency. He's 25 years old, and he's coming off the best season of his career, having four interceptions and being certainly one of the solid safeties out there in free agency. The trouble is NFL teams just aren't spending on safety during this free agency.
And teams cut safeties.
Yes.
Team cut. So there's a lot of veteran safeties out there, which has to hurt.
Right.
Had to hurt his appeal on the open market.
Completely. So maybe, like you said, it's a two-year deal, and he's able to go back out at 27 and try to test the waters.
It's like Michael Pittman. He's going to be 28 or 29 when he gets another shot.
Not too bad.
Good for him.
Yeah, exactly. Go that Jack Doyle route. Keep getting those contracts.
At a higher level.
Yeah.
At a higher money level.
Yeah, it was. Shane Steichen, also speaking with Colts Media this week, says he does expect Anthony Richardson to be ready for spring practice. So that is the first big
– that's a big deal.
Drop a news right there that, hey, we don't have to wait until OTAs in May. We don't have to wait until training camp. And when they actually say, hey, we expect him back for spring practice, that is something that most executives or coaches can be loath to do at times, Chap.
And they seldom do it. We're not going to put a time frame on this. Well, they did. And
I whine and complain about them not putting a timeline.
Right.
I'd be like, you have a timeline. I don't know what it is. Don't say you don't have a timeline. You know it.
You just don't want to share
it. But he's being open with it this time. So, yay.
Right.
Hooray.
Right. So, at the very least, he's on schedule. And, again, as I wrote, the only schedule that matters is that he's going to be ready to at some level for off-season work, which begins April
15th, I believe.
15th, I believe
15th
it is.
The date that
for returning coaches, yes.
In the first couple of weeks, it's strength, conditioning, and all that stuff. And then they get on the field the next week. The third week, I think, is on positional work. I don't think it's DBs against receivers. It's positional work. And then they get going. He needs every rep he can get. He just does. And he needs every rep with Michael Pittman and Jonathan
JT,
Taylor.
Get JT in there, man. Mm-hmm.
I've been saying that they were together for one play. It was two.
Come on, Chap.
I swear to God, I sat down yesterday and I looked at that stretch in the Tennessee game, and it was the first play they were out there, and it was a three-yard run. Then he was out there another play for – and he was pass protection. So he was out there for two plays. So,
okay.
But not only were they only on the field for two plays in this season, they did nothing – in OTAs, in training camp, because JT wasn't
– right.
He was here.
He was there, but
– you're sort of there. So, but this is invaluable. They will, as Shane Steichen told reporters, are going to monitor him, which we expect. But the fact that he's out – they had a – somebody threw out the social media clip of AR at
cheering on the Gators.
And he was windmilling that arm like you're checking boxes. Range of motion, yes, sir.
Uh-huh, looks good.
And we have no idea how in depth or how much depth there's been to his workouts, but you know he's been pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
So they will. This will be a case in the first month of OTA or not OTAs, but off season work. They will have to hold him back because he'll be ready to go. But the fact that he'll be probably pretty much ready for OTAs, and then you take the summer off, and they'll throw in the summer, and then training camp is invaluable.
And this is the reason that like Chap was alluding to earlier, Matt, that the Colts staff and front office is optimistic for this coming season, that they didn't feel like they needed to go all in, quote unquote, our favorite phrase here, going all in free agency. That
if they'd signed Hunter, is that all in? I mean, would that have satisfied the all-in mentality?
I think that would have certainly been helpful for the fans. But you're not here to please the fans necessarily. You're here to win games.
If you're too worried about pleasing the fans, one day you will be with them.
Right. But Anthony Richardson's the reason, so we'll be here to see what he can do this offseason.
It's like you said, they were play away from maybe getting into the playoffs last year. This is a 9-8 team going in, and you're like, well, why did they just run it back? Well, Chris Ballard has his way of building rosters. He has a strong belief that this is the way things should go. They did shoot their shot. It's not like they didn't try to put some guys. They put some feelers out on some guys. The Danielle Hunter stuff didn't work out. So, at that point when it was clear they weren't going to be able to get him, then we started to see all those deals start coming
through. Because those
guys
would, if you don't, then those guys are on the market.
Yep.
Right. And then you're going to lose a couple of them.
Yep.
Because, again, they tend to overvalue what they got. But Kenny Moore is one of the best nickels.
I mean, mm-hmm. can you imagine – I mean, the state of the secondary is also pretty fraught, is already pretty fraught as it is. Can you imagine without Kenny Hunter back – or Kenny Moore
back? I'd rather not.
No, yeah. in Grover – I don't know if Grover's would have got $39 million on the market, but he would have got a good offer. Again, once Plan A doesn't materialize, you've got to quickly transition to your next level, and that's retaining your own guys.
Mm-hmm. Grover, to his credit, said he didn't even pack anything.
He's so good.
Man, I knew I was coming back. I didn't pack anything.
And you've got to be, from a fan's perspective, you've got to be... I've seen probably in the couple interviews I've watched with Steichen, I have probably seen him smile more in the last couple of months than I saw him do all of last season. And I know it was his first head coaching experience here in the pros, and they lost their quarterback, and it was tough week to week. But my goodness, when that guy is talking about Anthony Richardson, he is excited.
Mm-hmm. So, and all Colts Nation as well, as they should be.
Yeah, because he just said, again, he admits it's a small sample size, four starts, 173 snaps, and I don't know what his – he only completed 60% of his passes, but you just saw things. You saw the way he ran the huddle. You saw the decisiveness, the strong arm. And we talked about the 4th-and-2 against Houston. What if AR is out there on 4th-and-2? Don't you think they convert?
Absolutely.
So, again, it's there's a little bit of – nervousness because you're banking on what you saw and what you're anticipating, but it's just you almost have to. This guy is your future. If he's not your future, what's the future? And we're going to see in the draft 5 quarterbacks taken in the top 13, 14 picks. Which
that's the best possible scenario.
The Colts
as
say
many as you can go 7.
You can't find 6 really. But that's where teams they've got. If you don't have the guy, you beat it today. If you don't have the guy, you haven't got a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So Richardson has to be the guy, because if he's not, and you'll find out in 2 years, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You've wasted the rest of your roster. Jonathan Taylor is 2 years older, and he'll be a free agent. And then Quentin Nelson, and on there's so many examples of teams believing they had the guy, Jacksonville, Tennessee. And when he's not the guy, your roster has got to be turned over, and then you're starting over.
If you look elsewhere, down at the NFL owners meetings, as I mentioned earlier, you will not see Jim Irsay, but Kalen Irsay-Jackson is down there representing the team and made an appearance on the Pat McAfee show saying that Jim is not quite recovered enough yet to make the trip. He said he's a, quote, tough dude, and expected a, quote, long road to recovery, and he's getting, quote, better every day. So that's the latest Jim Irsay update, which is about what we expected going into the weekend, that he would not be down there. That turned out to be right, and that he is improving better than he was a couple months ago. So hopefully we see him during the draft like we usually do, and then it will be a time to ask questions about more than just draft picks at that point. But nevertheless, glad to hear straight from the Irsay family on the record officially that right. Jim Irsay is okay and getting better.
Well, again, I talked to him, was it 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever right. it is, and he was still in the hospital from major leg surgery. So he made it pretty clear that he wouldn't be there as much as he wants to be there. So you're right. The next you know measuring point will be in the draft because he always talks to us on that second day. Is it on Saturday?
Usually the third day.
Saturday.
Which is Saturday, yeah.
So and I really question whether he'll get much into the medical issues. I just don't. And that's fine. The whole thing is how are you doing and are you back from the fan base and from the team point is are you back steering things? Mm-hmm. I mean, your hands are on the wheel, or is it Carly and Kalen and you're not to say advisory. That's he's not an advisor, but are things back the way they've been? So maybe he'll surprise us and go more in depth in his medical issues. Part of me just thinks that's not going to happen this time.
He's an advisor in the sense that I would advise you to listen to what he says.
I'd advise you to remember that
the policymaker.
This is a vote of one.
Exactly. Plenty more action going on down the NFL owners' meetings and making the league look a bit different and in some ways dramatically different next year. Perhaps one of the more significant ones is saying goodbye to the hip drop tackle. It involves the tackle where a defensive player wraps his arms around the runner and unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips / lower body and landing on and trapping the runner's legs.
That sounds complicated, but when you see it, you know exactly what they're talking about.
Exactly. It's what injured, was it Mark Andrews, the tight end, or last year for the Baltimore yes. Ravens? There's one of the more recent famous examples, but all you have to do, if you don't know what we're talking about, go to YouTube, you know, or go to Google, and you can get a very clear idea of what it is.
And they showed a clip of several instances at the owners' meetings
yes.
about what this is.
So it is now a 15-yard penalty and an automatic first down for the offense if someone tackles in this way. And the competition committee said that hip drop tackles have a higher injury rate than regular
20%
tackles.
20%, I thought they said,
which is
higher.
Yeah.
20 times higher, which is different than 20%.
No, yeah, that's quite a bit. That's what, 2,000%?
And they mentioned what the Richard McKay, who's, is he chairman or vice chairman of the longtime competition committee, they sort of think there's going to be not as many hip drop tackle penalties in a game, but you're going to see it when they do the review and guys get fined for it.
Right.
So on Fridays we'll get, no, this guy was, he was fined, whatever, but he wasn't penalized. This is just going to be another split second decision that officials have to make, and they're already making a bunch.
Matt, I can tell you who is not a fan of the hip drop tackle rule.
Is that Kenny Moore?
Kenneth Moore the second, yes.
And Zaire Franklin.
Zaire as well. But yeah, Kenny's been pretty vociferous about it online on Twitter, asking questions here and there. It is not challengeable, by the way.
No.
If they rule it, tough beans. You cannot challenge it. It cannot be reviewed. It cannot be overturned. So defensive players are gonna have to put this right up there in their noggin that you cannot do this, or else
kind of like the horse collar.
Exactly. That happened. What is that? 15 years ago now? Maybe that.
I think
came
that
in?
Sounds long.
10, 15 too years
long
ago. Maybe 10 years ago.
But it, again, if you watch it, it dramatically there's injury concerns.
Yep.
The way you drag a guy down.
Yep. So
on the horse collar.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying you can still do it if it's between the tackles, if I remember correctly, because
yes.
we've seen that a couple times. Like, oh, that was a horse collar. Well, yes, it was, but at that part of the field, it's okay. You just can't do it when they're outside that box.
Right. So this is one that you cannot do at any point, I believe, is what the rule
is. I got to tell you, I saw some of the clips, and I had a hard time myself
mm-hmm.
trying to figure out what was swivel hip drop tackle and what was guy dragging guy down from behind.
Right.
Now, clearly, when the player rolls up on the other player's legs, that is caused by that motion.
Right.
Some of the other stuff I saw, I did have a hard time differentiating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think some fans are going to be the same way on that.
And that's why you're going to see more fines than you are penalties.
Because mm-hmm. we were talking about that in the newsroom. When you see it in fast motion during a game, that's going to be harder to get the determination. And I think that you're right with what McKay said on the fines. That might be how they legislate this out of the game.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting to see exactly how it is legislated here in the first year. I'm sure that it will lead to people being upset, nevertheless, on both sides of it. So, but eventually it'll be like the horse collar eventually.
You'll deal with it.
That, exactly. 5 years, 7 years down the road, you're going to have far, far fewer of them because players will be, A, that now younger players are going to have to be taught not to do this because players are taught to do this in younger age brackets.
Levels, right.
Like on how to tackle if you're trying to tackle someone from behind. Now you can't teach
people to do
this.
Leading with the helmet, they're doing what they can to get that out of it.
Exactly. So you see that, and you see those telling signs now to let you know that it's a like targeting penalty in college football, especially like if you lower the head and lead with the crown of the head, that's it right there. Period.
Running backs in the NFL, lower your helmet, you're going to get penalized or fined.
Can't do it. So I'm sure after some time and after some penalties thrown and after some discussion on all the talking head shows, we will get some very clear cut indicators of when this is going to be called, when it's not going to be called. But in the meantime, I think it is going to be frustrating because
Still be in the game. I mean, the headshots, I think back to Michael Pittman Jr. last year against Pittsburgh.
Yep.
They're still in the game. It's just for the most part, they're severely reduced from what they were maybe 5 years ago.
Here's something else that's brand new this year. Kickoffs.
Strap it in, buddy. This is going to be fun.
It is. I agree. The NFL is following an XFL model here. Props to the XFL, always being willing to push the envelope for many things, even in the first iteration of the XFL. Some things did not work, like the two people running for the ball
for the
midfield. Yeah, exactly. The very first one, someone separates
Red
a shoulder.
Red
or
Rover,
exactly. Yeah, that did not work. But
somebody got a seasoning in.
Yeah, it was
injury.
Like the very first time, literally. Like it was the very first ever XFL play. He was like, that didn't work. But other things like this have worked. So what's going to happen is the kicker remains at the 35-yard line where he has been kicking off from in the past, but the coverage team is lining up ahead of him, like 25 yards ahead of him on the opponent's 40-yard line, and the receiving team, all, I don't know, 9 or 10 players, however many you're putting in there.
It just depends. No,
it's got to be at least 9.
Yeah,
I think
it's got to be 9.
Guys back.
Yep. So has to line up between the 30 and the 35-yard line. So basically 10 to 15 yards away from the kicking team. And then the kicker kicks the ball. And there's basically, if it goes in the end zone, it's an automatic touchback. It goes out to the 30, I think, is what the rule is. And so you're trying really not to kick it in the end zone. You're trying to drop it there inside the 5-yard line, if at all possible. And so it's called the landing zone between the 20 and
starts at the 30 if you kick into the end zone.
There you go. Yes. So teams can station two returners back there. Coverage team can't move until the ball hits the ground or a player in the landing zone or the end zone. So all that to say, I hope you followed along, but if you've watched any of the XFL, you know what it is. And again, this is another thing that you can go online. You can find perfect examples of very, very,
and it's
very
one
quickly.
Of, you watch it 2 or 3 times, and then you get it.
Right.
Because it's, when you explain it, it's not quite the same as
seeing it. It sounds super complicated. How's this ever going to work?
But it's not complicated see it.
It's not.
So what they're trying to do, Chap, here, is they're trying to take away more high-speed collisions. And kickoff returns are one of the plays that always have more high-speed collisions. You're going to get them typically. I think Matt brought one up just now with the Michael Pittman play in the secondary. You see high-speed collisions in various plays all the time, but on every kickoff return, you see high-speed collisions because people start just sprinting down the field and they go 20 yards before finally someone kind of turns around and is just standing still and is about to take the full brunt of a... These are the most athletic guys on the team. You know, the 240-pound, 230-pound linebackers.
It's a tight end. It's a DB.
This is Segun Alubi, like, charging at you straight.
Right.
Like, he's a fast dude. He's a big dude. And he's going to hit you square on. And it's going to hurt. And so that's what the NFL is trying to take away with these new rules.
And they've addressed this, the kickoffs, before they really neutered it. But, like, with the wedge blocking, you couldn't have the wedge blocking and all that. So yeah, they're trying to legislate safety into an extremely violent sport,
right?
Which I understand. My first thought, and I'm watching it in my head, and I've seen some of the replays of the XFL, is strategy is going to be so important, because if you've got a returner who's got that good quick short burst or short area burst or whatever, he's gone. If he gets past the first line, he's gone. So I would guess the kicking team's going to have to peel back a couple of guys, so you've got a safety net back there. It's really going to be interesting. And all of a sudden, do you put your better athletes? Do you put Tyreek Hill out there? Because there's not as much of a concern about getting blown up from a guy running 30 yards at you.
Right.
And again, if he gets through, somebody, I was listening to the radio on the way in, it's like cover zero, where the New England game with Jonathan Taylor. Remember the long touchdown that sealed
it? I do.
You get through the line of scrimmage, and there's nobody there. Make one guy miss. So there's going to be a lot of strategy involved. And I think the league is probably going to get what they want, fewer injuries and more explosive plays. Matt and I were talking before we went on the air. There's going to be some unintended consequences. I don't know what those might be, but there always are.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. It's not us. It's the special teams coaches across the league. So Brian Mason is going to have to go to work on this. And
does he bring in some former XFL coaches?
He might.
Who have dealt with this just as an advisor?
I'm sure that's not out of the realm of possibility. And the first thing I would do if I was him, like, you go and you watch tape of every single kickoff in the XFL that looked like this, and you see what happened.
And then you go sign their best XFL returner.
Darn right. To your special team. Yeah, for real. Like, because this is completely different, Matt. Like, it's still keeping the kickoff in the game, which the fans want, and I think players want too, because it's an important play, and it can be a great boon for your team, or bust, as the case may be. But it's going to be it's a kickoff in name and kind of in appearance, but the strategies are going to be completely different once we figure it out.
Well, and what we've seen, last season they started the fair catch rule on kickoffs. And so, I mean, in most cases, I thought you would be crazy to not just call for the fair catch, take the ball to 25. Because there are so few kicks. They have good hang time. The coverage team's getting down there. There are so few kicks that are really, really well returnable. And so you can understand why there weren't many returns last year compared to the last, decade or decade and a half of football, especially. And so this is another way to kind of change the approach.
So in light of that claim that there are few kickoff returns in the NFL now, you are right. The most kickoff returns per game in the NFL last year, the Green Bay Packers had 1.8 returns per game. That was it. Less than two kickoff returns per game. And you're typically receiving, I don't know, four to six, somewhere in that range, kicks a game. So they were returning less than two. I tweeted this out. So if you guys saw my tweet, who do you think had the fewest kick returns in the NFL last year? The fewest.
I don't know.
Your Indianapolis Colts had the fewest, had a half of a return per game. So they probably had eight or nine kick returns for the entire year. And you might think, in some aspect, well, maybe that's because they lost Isaiah Rodgers even before the season. He's your kickoff returner. And maybe that's true. Maybe you're thinking, well, maybe it's because they lost Dallas Flowers after four games, but he only returned one kick in those first four games anyway, himself. So he was not returning them at that point of the season either. This seems to have been more of a strategy thing and a Brian Mason thing, based on, Matt, what you said just a few minutes ago, that a fair catch gets you to the 25 automatically right there. Or teams are kicking it into the end zone as well, or deep into the end zone at that point against you. So so the Colts are one team that is really going to have to actually really change the strategy here on kickoff returns, from a team that only had a half a kickoff return per game to one that's probably going to have somewhere between three and six. Because in the XFL, I've got the stats right here that was posted by Mike Clay, by the way. So credit to Mike Clay of ESPN, that he put all 40 teams, all 32 NFL teams and all eight teams in the XFL on one chart. All eight XFL teams had more kickoff returns per game than any one of the NFL teams. So I said the Green Bay Packers had the most, 1.8 returns per game. The fewest returns per game in the XFL was 3.6. It was double what was happening in the NFL. So you're going to get more returns in this format.
Nine.
Nine.
The Colts had nine.
Nine total returns all last year. There you go. Boom. They're going to have nine in probably two or three games this year.
And, you know, if you're a team that just doesn't want to mess with this, you just kick the ball out of the end zone and they get the ball at the 30-yard line. Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you could argue, and maybe we'll see that the teams who return it that are good at it, they get the ball to the 40, I don't know, whatever, to where maybe you think, well, this is dumb. Let's just knock the heck out of the ball and start at the 30. And they've got studies. Frank Reich went through this one time with me, the percentages, how they increase, scoring increase, 5 yards, 10 yards, where your starting line of scrimmage is. And it's really incredible how starting from the 20 is so much harder than the 30. You're only talking one more first down.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And that's why I really think that special teams coaches and head coaches are going to have to go back to the XFL.
We're going to see so much of that in off-season work, training camp. And then we're going to see in these first three preseason games, what does it look like?
Right. So
and
I'm sure.
And how are you doing?
I'm sure we're going to bring it up to Shane throughout the offseason at some point for sure. And he's going to say, well, we're doing our due diligence, you know, because he doesn't know at that point. Like, at many times, like, I will say, NFL coaches know. They're trying to give you the runaround.
Not this time.
Not this time. Like, legitimately, they don't know.
They just found out.
They're going to have some idea because they're going to study what happened in the XFL. Right.
He's going to say, we don't know. We're going to check the tape.
But, we'll look at the tape. They will look at every XFL return. And then it's probably going to take 3 or 4 weeks of the NFL season for teams to really get a handle on what they want to do, because it could work differently in this league than it did in the XFL.
At some point, and the Colts are good about this, is we'll get Brian Mason just to sort of get his idea. And he's not going to tell us a great
strategy. But
he can give us his input about, you know, how does this change things a lot, and all that. And maybe he will go into how you start, like you talked, the evaluation analysis. I don't think he's going to tell us they're going to bring in these guys or whatever to help with it. But he's the one that if they let him, the Colts let him, can give us a pretty good insight on how this will change special teams and kick returns.
Yeah, this is not a slight at Brian Mason at all, because I think he was very, very fine in his first year here. But I would love to have a guy like Bubba Ventrone on my staff. If I'm around the NFL,
tremendous.
To actually give serious, good football chops. And like I said, I'm not slighting Brian Mason at all, because
he's been an NFL coach 1 year.
But yeah, exactly. But Bubba Ventrone has been one for a long time. He's been special teams focused for a long time. I think that having guys like him around the league is going to be really valuable for specific teams, wherever they are. Dave Tobe in Kansas City is another one.
John Fostel, he was a guy I've seen quoted a lot. He's a special teams guy. Jim Fostel's son, who was here a year or two, at least in training camp, as an assistant. So those guys, all of a sudden, those guys, because the league has spent so much time minimizing, I guess, this portion of the game. And now all of a sudden, it's like, no, we're going to go, and it doesn't go incrementally. This is
we're
drastic.
All in.
That's a great term.
I couldn't resist. I apologize. So to be determined on exactly how this impacts the Colts, but we are all very interested to
see. Who's your kick guy right now? Josh Downs? I mean, if he had a game tomorrow.
I think so. Well, Dallas Flowers might be, since he's coming back from injury. But I think Josh Downs might be. Yeah, he could be in that list.
Curious.
I don't know.
Do you draft a kick returner?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you draft Isaac Garendo, the kid from Avon High School, the 6 foot, 220 pound, 4.440, whatever it is, running, and say, go.
Make one guy miss, and boy, you're running.
And see you later. Let's go.
It'd be interesting, too. I mean, honestly, with kickoffs being what they were last season, you could go get yourself a snack.
You did, and then
missed because you weren't going to miss anything, because that ball was going to be on the 25-yard line.
Didn't matter.
This gives some interest to that play again, I think.
So some kickoff scenarios also breaking this down even further, which I know is exactly what everyone wants. The landing zone kickoffs must be returned. There are no fair catches in that area. So if the ball lands in between the 20 and the goal line, you have to bring it back. There's no longer a wave the fair catch and out to the 25. Kickoffs that go into the landing zone and roll into the end zone must be returned or downed. And downing the ball would bring it out to the 20 only. So it's not going to the 30 at that point. So there's a...
But it has to have hit that landing zone.
Right, right. Yes, it does. Kickoffs that land in the end zone are downed at the 30. Kickoffs that go out of the back of the end zone.
You can return it from the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
But this is if you down it,
right?
It's a 30.
Right. If a kick does not reach the landing zone, it's treated like an out of bounds kick, and the receiving team gets the ball at the 40.
Right.
So if you just completely dwarf the kick,
yeah, which I don't think we'd see that very often.
I don't think so either.
You could have a super windy day, or get, you know, just get a bad kick on the ball. I guess
you never know. Like it could, I don't want to say it never happens because weird stuff happens.
Guys shank punts. Weird things happen in sports.
Griff Whalen tries to snap the ball to Colt Anderson. So
Seared in my mind.
I know, and I'm sorry for bringing it up. But like I said,
Colt Anderson was named. Is he a special teams coach?
Yeah,
somewhere?
He's a special teams coach now.
And all I could think of, and all people did was put that picture out there.
Poor guy. But he was such a special teams ace for a long time for this team. That's why he's a coach now somewhere. Right. University of Montana boy. Where was he from? Was he from Haver, Montana? The Blue Ponies of Haver? Or was that Mark Mariani?
You've got too much information.
Much information on Montana specifically is what I have kicking around in my head. So this is a 1-year trial rule that could be revisited. It will be revisited.
Three
in the
teams voted against
year.
It. Mm-hmm. So I think they said if six more teams say, that didn't work very well, they'd have
to have 24 of 30 teams.
Is it 80%, 75%?
Something like that.
So we'll see what happens next offseason. Could be renewed for 2025. Onside kicks can only happen in the fourth quarter when a team is behind. Kicking team must declare its intent. There will be no more surprise onside kicks. 15 years too late
for the
Indianapolis Colts. Sorry, but it is now a rule moving forward. So it won't happen again. You got that going for you.
So onside kicks are virtually gone.
Virtually, yes. Almost completely gone. So we'll see what happens there. That could be something they change again and give, like there's been talk about or some proposals about you get a 4th and 10 or a 4th and 15,
20,
4th and 20,
mm-hmm. which would be
a heck of a conversion. But yeah, we'll see if that
breeds
some changes.
You get a 4th and 20 and then you have a hip drop tackle and it's automatic first down.
And first down, exactly.
There you go. See,
it
works.
Yeah,
these go hand in hand.
Still probably a higher conversion rate than what we've seen in onside kicks.
That's true.
They changed that balance rule on the line,
it took that out of the game. It's virtually impossible to get. The challenge system has a slight change. Teams will get a third challenge after just one successful challenge. Again, with the old rule, the teams had to hit both their challenges to earn a third challenge. Now, if you get one, you're basically retooled that one, which is fine. And like we haven't seen games slow down dramatically with challenges at all. Like games are pretty much 3 hours chap like clockwork. We always talk about in the press
boxes.
Boy,
this game's going quick.
Exactly.
Yeah,
nope, it's going to slow down.
It'll be 3:01.
Exactly. It always is. But so I don't anticipate big changes with that. But we'll see, because it's so rare that a team challenges even twice in a game anyway. So that will be beneficial for maybe a couple, a handful of times throughout this season. The trade deadline is now pushed back 1 week to the Tuesday after week 9. It had been week 8, so there's one more week for teams to figure out what they want to do.
Are you still in it, or are you going to dump?
Exactly. So there's just one more week of, and I don't know if it had been week 8, chap, for even when it was a 16-week season.
I think that's part of the reason they made the change was to mirror
16
that,
game season
that change a little bit more.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. And if the owners get their way, they'll have a 20 game regular season. They'll move it back to week 10 in a couple of years. So we'll see about that. Plays with a passer down by contact or out of bounds before throwing are now reviewable plays. So
I thought I saw that intentional grounding was also reviewable.
Okay.
I don't think it is now.
Okay. That's possible.
It may be.
Come on, Matt.
There was a lot of information to go through the owners' meeting, so I tried to pick and choose the most important ones. But
reviews are of clear and obvious visual evidence showing the play clock expired before the snap. Well, that'll be fun because that happens like frequently.
They've already said it goes to zero, but then there's like a little pause.
Exactly, like the umpire is like looks it and then looks down, and so it like clear and obvious.
If you see zero,
that mean?
you It's done.
Yeah, right? Zero, my man.
The only way I can see that it would be clear and obvious is if they added tenths to that clock.
Yeah.
Like you would, like a shot clock. And then that could give you, that gives you a little bit of wiggle room there on that other end. I don't know.
Yeah, let's see here. Peacock will exclusively stream the week one game in Brazil on Friday, September 6th.
I've got a subscription to Peacock, so I'm okay with it.
Well, the Eagles will play in that game, so I'm going to have to make sure I have mine. Although
you can get that 3-month free subscription and then
cancel
it.
There we go. Perfect. Has yet to be announced. So I know that somebody in our office has a Peacock subscription though, because we use it to bring in IndyCar, stuff all the time. So maybe I can just,
still can't watch the Indy 500 live on Peacock.
Nope,
right?
Still can't do it. Not here locally. You need a VPN.
Not unless you use a VPN.
Exactly.
That's above
my
pay grade.
Exactly. I'm sure a lot of people do. Exactly. Our generation, it's not a big deal.
It's usually my responsibility to live blog the race for the digital team, which, the radio coverage is great, but also kind of hard to get a handle on. Mm-hmm. It's kind of abstract, whereas on TV you can really kind of get a feel for things. And so, yeah, when I've done that, I've used a VPN to make it look like I'm dialing from Buffalo, New York, and then I can watch the race. It's pretty silly.
Prime Video returns as the home of Thursday Night Football and will stream a wild card game. People loved it, of course, when Peacock streamed the Miami-Kansas City playoff game last year. So we'll see exactly how many streamers. Like, here's the deal. Like, streaming is here. It is here to stay. It is going to stay. And the big companies that own these streaming services, like NBC Universal, whoever that owns Peacock, they want Peacock subscriptions. And if they have a deal with the NFL to carry their games throughout the year, they're going to push something onto their streaming service. It's just going to happen. You can complain about it all you want.
I hate it, but you're exactly right.
But it's not going anywhere. It's just not. Remember when ABC... when Monday Night Football went to ESPN, like it was a big deal that was going off of cable and going to ESPN, and because people, not everybody had cable back then when I was growing up, and now it's the streaming is the new frontier, and people are going to push it. It's going to happen. So I'll just say, in the most loving way possible, get over it.
Prime did the playoff game last year, right? The Miami.
I thought it was Peacock.
Peacock.
Okay, well, and I was probably one. I did Peacock because of the AT&T didn't have whatever at the time. But I kept it. And normally people do the three-month free subscription and then they cancel it. I thought I saw something where they said, Peacock said like 20% of the people that started that kept it.
Yep.
And that's the intent.
Exactly. So, they hope that you forget. And just let it go. Or you want to keep it.
Or you want to keep it. A lot of times I cuss and then I've got to pay a month because I forgot to cancel. But yeah, it's in your next point here, Merry Christmas from the NFL. Two games on Christmas, a Wednesday.
Players are going to love that.
They're very excited. I can already tell.
People need to, you need to accept my default is that whatever the NFL wants, it's going to get. You know, an 18-game season is going to happen. It is. And
it just is.
Players can complain. Players do complain. But if you pull the union, the players, however many thousands of players that is, a good enough portion of them will say, I get an extra paycheck or whatever on an 18-game season.
Because a lot of the people in the NFL are in their first contract.
That's what they want. They don't care about 10 years. But this thing about Wednesdays. So now they've not played Tuesday, right? Has there been a Tuesday game?
I don't think so.
Now they will have played every day because they were, remember when Fridays was supposed to be only for high schools and all that, and they played the Black Friday
game? Black Friday game this year, Amazon Prime.
They don't quit doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that now four teams are going to play three games in 11 days, and it'll be if you play on that on the Christmas, you're playing Saturday, so you've got your normal four days. You talk to players on a 7-day scale. You play Sunday, Monday's a day you might come maybe you get the day off if it's late in the season. Tuesday's a day off, and Wednesday. Your body is sort of getting back to where you can operate.
We saw the Colts last year do walkthroughs on Wednesdays
throughout
much of the end of the year.
Yes, it got to be more than not. And that's just a case of these coaches realize it's rest and rehab, recovery. And with the Thursday game, with now the Wednesday game, you just take those like 2 days, and it seems it's just 2 days. No, it's not. These guys watch a game and what these guys go through. You know, we're in the locker room. We see these guys walk around with ice and ace bandages and all this stuff. It takes you a couple of days to get over, you know, 60 or 70 collisions at high speed. So it's that's where the disconnect is. Money rules. They can talk all they want about player safety. We're taking the horse collar, this hip drop tackle. The bottom line is, it's if it makes financial sense, they do it.
Yep. And money and games on Christmas make financial sense, because last year those ratings were through the roof for the three games Monday.
You celebrate Christmas in the morning with the family, and yep. then you get on the couch or your recliner and watch football.
Exactly. I mean, the NBA has been a Christmas thing for a good long time, and the NBA gets fair ratings on Christmas. Don't get me wrong, but there's a difference between the NBA mm-hmm. and the NFL.
There's a difference between the NFL and all the leagues.
Yep. There's a difference between the NFL and everything. Everything
yeah,
else.
Go and look at the TV ratings from the Combine.
Yep.
They were probably higher than most NBA games.
Yep. So very much so. Could have been higher. It might have been higher than some of the NCAA tournament games.
Unbelievable.
Although that one might be close. The NCAA men's tournament always draws some
Caitlin,
good. Yeah, Caitlin Clark too.
Caitlin
yeah,
Clark
I don't
too.
I don't know what they drew for, but I know it was a good number. Sure, especially when compared to women's tournament in the past. So our immediate future takes us to April 15th with OTAs beginning for teams that already have their head coach, which of course includes the Indianapolis Colts. Not an early thing this year. Oh, also good news for the Colts, Chap. They do not have to go to training camp week early.
I meant to add that.
Yes,
forgot
we'll throw that in there here near the end of our Colts Blue Zone podcast. No Hall of Fame game for the Indianapolis Colts, although we suspected that it might have been a thing.
Canton wanted Colts. Bears, they did. That, uh-huh. that was their first choice. And then, you know, they've got Houston and the Bears.
So
you still get the Bears entourage. And, yeah, it does.
The Bears had to be there based on who they got
three
elected.
Guys, they got
yeah,
three
exactly.
of the,
had to be the Bears.
Six yep. inductees or whatever it is. And so, yeah, I can't tell if the Colts – I would think the Colts would be happy they're not in it. Maybe if you're the coaching staff, you would have liked to have had the fourth preseason game.
Give it an extra game to learn that new kickoff system.
Yeah, well, but then the downside of the extra game is you come to camp a week early.
Right.
Yeah. Which I think they've kind of settled in the fact that camp is long enough the way it is. So, but still, so the game's on the August 1st, and then they'll have the ceremonies on the 3rd with Dwight Freeney.
And it's going to be the Houston Texans there playing the Chicago Bears. And
they've got a guy going in the hall.
Exactly, and so it's their first guy going
first
in the
guy.
Hall.
So it'll work out.
They should be there in the Hall of Fame game. Let them go to
let
camp.
Let them have it and hope the field's in good enough condition they can play the game.
And hope that the sports directors and anchors down in Houston have the updated cell phone numbers for certain players who might reach out to them, telling them.
I can still remember standing outside the locker room, not knowing what we're doing, and then players started texting
uh-huh.
what was going on.
Yep, like, we ain't playing, man. This ain't happening, dude. So yeah, that was something that went very south very quickly, and hopefully certainly never happens again. Just a couple weeks until the NFL draft, April 25th. We are less than a month.
Who are they picking? Position? Forget player. Position.
Like, looking at them now, like I still say, if Brock Bowers falls to them, that's makes it very difficult.
More
not
and more,
to take
I see him.
Him
going to the Jets at 10.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. But I think if Bowers is gone and the top three receivers are gone, I think that they're going to take a shot at the cornerback that they like best.
They'll get the first or second corner.
Yeah, I don't know who it's going to be. If they love Quinyon Mitchell, like, he's a little shorter than I think Bowers usually likes. If Terrion Arnold falls there, he's really intriguing. Nate Wiggins from Clemson, I think, is an athletic freak that they could like. Cooper DeJean from Iowa is maybe by many accounts the most intriguing, but had a serious injury. So it's hard for me to pick one, but I'm sure that the Colts – have one in their mind of all those guys that they like above the
and
others.
And then you can get a receiver in round two.
And then they take a receiver in round. I would love, like, if I was a fan of the Colts, I keep saying this, if I was a fan, like, people know I grew up half an hour south of Philadelphia. I grew up as a massive Eagles fan. If I was, like, if my Eagles were picking here in this similar scenario, I would want a weapon for my new young quarterback. I would
err on the side of more is better.
Exactly. And you say it's a deep receiver draft. Like, you can get somebody good in the second round.
It's not the same.
I'd rather have somebody great in the first round
than somebody very good in the second round.
Exactly. Like, that's what I'd want. Well, what does that make me stupid? Maybe it does. I don't know.
Yes, Dave.
Exactly. It makes me an idiot. And
I would be such a bad GM.
I know. Me too.
I would be so bad.
Yeah. All of us would be.
Completely. And that's why we're here chatting. But we have our own special skills.
But I saw somebody had him, Matt Miller, who's does really
he's good.
He had him taking a defensive tackle.
The guy,
15.
Byron Murphy from
yes.
Texas?
Which, okay, but they just re-signed Grover. They just brought in Raekwon Davis. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And re-signed Brian.
You're probably going to
right.
I don't count him. But,
well, yeah.
But then they're going to probably extend DeForest Buckner at some point. So mm-hmm. that would be, to me, as much as Ballard loves the lines,
mm-hmm.
that would be overkill in my estimation.
Be a little odd, yes. But if they're going fully all in on Anthony Richardson, Jonathan Taylor, we've talked about the possibility of offensive line because this is a very strong tackle draft and moving someone inside. But
okay,
again,
then you take a receiver at 15 and a tackle at 46.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, there's so many possibilities. Like
Gus Bradley hates.
I know.
He would hate my approach.
I lean toward cornerback, to be honest. Just looking at the roster now, because you need help outside. You need some more guys there. You need somebody that you feel a little bit better with, I think, as an important player. And they haven't signed anybody. If they sign someone,
sign
who's
a receiver with the idea you're going to score 35 a game.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Outscore them. Come on. Have right. fun. Get those new kickoff returns and see what you can do with them. So we'll see. Plenty more to discuss that over the coming weeks.
We all
I'm
know
sure,
they're going to trade down into the
Matt,
second round.
Stop.
They only have
Matt. Again. The idea is it could if the corner. I think both areas are deep enough. Certainly, receiver is to where you could fall back to, not too far, 20. Let's not be stupid. Let's not be stupid.
You should text Chris Ballard that. Just tell him
Chris,
not to be
stupid. Chris, don't be stupid, please. But they could very well think that the depth, they're not going to get the top three receivers. Again, five quarterbacks.
Right.
Do the math. Five quarterbacks.
Three receivers.
Three
There's
receivers,
eight.
Two tackles.
9, 10.
A defensive end.
11.
Brock Bowers.
12.
See, you're almost there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in such a good spot. But don't dilute. Because, again, when you go back, unless there's a guy you really, really love and maybe have a higher grade on than everybody else, the further you go back, the less you're going to get just by the way it works.
So we will go talk plenty of draft over the coming weeks before that draft in 1 month out in Detroit here on the Colts Blue Zone podcast. Follow
us. You think Indy ever gets the draft, don't they?
Like, you would think so, but at the same time, they keep getting the combine. So I think that could be that the NFL can say, nah, you guys get the combine
that's a good
every
point.
Year.
Of course, I'm going to take the combine
say
away. And
they want to take the combine away.
Yeah, when they take the combine away, then maybe.
Show.
But they're like, well, you've had the combine for 40 years, so let's give it 5 or 10.
Good point.
You know, I could totally see the NFL doing that. But at the same time, the NFL is a good relationship with Indy, you know, and
they
a good relationship
so
with Jim Irsay.
It would be stupid when they move this combine.
Stupid. Yeah, well, we're grumbling to the finish here on the Colts Blue Zone podcast.
That's what we do best.
I've had a good day. I'm happy today, so I shouldn't have finished on a downer. I'm sorry.
I can't complain, but sometimes I do.
That's right.
On the Colts Blue Zone podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, at Colts Blue Zone. Mike Chappell is at mchappell51. Matt Adams is at Statamatty. I'm at @DaveG_sports. Read all of Mike Chappell's work online, fox59.com, cbs4indy.com, and we'll see you next week on the Colts Blue Zone podcast.